I hope you enjoy my rocket sounds.
Yeah, they're wonderful.
Hopefully my rocket doesn't blow up in the atmosphere like a certain entrepreneur's.
Wow, throwback to that relevant piece of media.
It's a good thing it was unmanned.
Yeah, there's a damn good reason it was.
Speaking of some entrepreneur out there, you know, it could be anyone, really. Did you hear about these newer car models out on the road from a entrepreneur that are just turning into bricks after like 100 miles?
No. What are you talking about? What is this?
So I'm sure you're familiar with the new car on the market that kind of looks like the Warthog from Halo. It's a shiny, steely, very polygon.
Are we talking about the Cybertruck, Tesla's Cybertruck or whatever?
I'm not talking about the Cybertruck specifically. I'm just talking about a car that could be any car.
Are you
car.
Afraid of getting sued by Tesla or something? What's happening here?
Listen, man, I gotta cover my tracks, all right? Everyone knows I'm the inflammatory guy who goes after certain people, except I have no power. The people I talk shit about, they can come after me with real shit, all right?
Okay, go on.
So you know, these new vehicles that are out on the market, they've released them in the past year or whatever. Everyone, first of all, said they were ugly as shit, and I agree. But at first, I just thought they were still, like, you know, prototyping, still in development phase. They're now out on the road. I've seen two of them in real life. Blew my fucking mind. Also, the first time I saw it, it was at night. And when it was approaching, it was coming up the street. It was just a pair of headlights. I could not see the vehicle. It was just this unique shape for their headlights. And I was like, okay, first of all, turn your high beams off, you asshole. And then eventually, like, pulls up and passes me. And I'm like, oh my God, it's fucking real. Why the fuck do you have this shitty fucking car? Like, it just looks objectively ugly for like a real life car. This is something I drew in second grade when I was like, yeah, I'm going to make my own new car. It's going to have fucking, I just tried to make a Mach 5, but it was a Humvee version, apparently.
Yeah, it's all chrome.
Yeah, it's all chrome. And recently I've been seeing a lot of reports of this vehicle just like literally breaking itself after a couple hundred miles. It just dies on the road, and you're just there in your chrome vehicle wondering, does AAA cover the shit?
Oh, okay. Huh.
And then a recent report came out saying, I don't know if the manufacturer openly admitted to this, but somebody agrees in some capacity that these cars went onto the market a little too early. You know, they were prematurely released. They were like, you know, maybe we should have left this in a couple more development cycles.
Yeah, maybe we should have let this one marinate for a couple more years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I took to Google while you were talking and explaining it a bit to me, and it seems like more or less the battery storage is only about half full from what it could be or should be. On these things, and so it means that they get about half the worth that they should be, and also that means they have the lowest energy capacity of like basically any electric pickup truck thing on the market right now.
Interesting.
So yeah. People are like taking apart the Cybertrucks or doing teardowns on them and finding that there's just so much extra unused space in the battery packs. And they're like, what the fuck's going on here?
We have so much room for activities. Why are we not using it?
Tesla's going to like sell us the battery pack DLC or something. like fucking Apple all over again, making the Lightning port. So you have to buy the dongle to charge and listen with plug-in earphones.
God, I hate that. I hate that so much. But shout out to the UK. Was it the UK or EU? Could have been before Brexit. Anyway, shout out to Europe for suing Apple and then forcing them to make all of their products ship to Europe. They have to be, like, the charging port needs to be USB, whatever is like universal over there. So that's pretty cool. And then I don't actually know this for a fact, but I'm pretty sure because of that, at least here in the United States, Apple's also starting to like push product using this USB charging port to kind of like make it also more universal. I could be lying on that part, but I feel like that's true.
Sure. Not that I don't care. They should do this. Mm-hmm. I'm never going to buy an Apple product again, but they should.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody and their mother has something that plugs in with USB-C these days. So the fact that Apple is the only standout because they just want to have proprietary technology and just be different for the sake of making money is like the Lightning port doesn't do anything different as far as I know. I mean, somebody's probably going to tell me otherwise, but fuck it. Welcome to the tech cast, everybody.
Yeah, I'm looking at my timer like, wow, 6 minutes in, we haven't said a single thing about One Piece.
We're two guys who know a little bit about technology, speak as if they're experts, like most podcasts, to be fair. But yeah, man. That's not exactly what we do here. What do we do here, Justin?
What we do here is we talk about things and ask ourselves, does it do?
Great. Now we're just going to steal from another podcast idea.
Well, it's a good thing that company's dead, so they can't sue us, right?
Well, you can't say that anymore because they're getting picked up. Well, the podcast network is getting picked up by the same management company that Mr. Beast is run by.
That wasn't confirmed. Was that confirmed? I should look into
that. It's not Mr. Beast buying that network. It's the management company that Mr. Beast also is employed by, or that the management company that manages Mr. Beast, they have bought the podcast network. Again, not all of Rooster Teeth, just their podcast network.
Well, as long as I keep RTP, I'm okay.
That's fine by me, too. It's mostly the content that I consume from them these days. So,
wait, does this mean Always Open can come back? Please, God.
Well, let's not.
I know they've gone on like two hiatuses before. But please, third time's
the
charm.
Yeah, let's not jump too far in logic here. Let's get the ones that we still have back off the ground, and then we can worry about raising from the dead a third time this other podcast.
I believe,
as long as somebody out there believes, there's a chance.
Mr. Beast, if you're out there, you should totally resurrect Always Open. It's a fantastic podcast. It is incredibly progressive. It's ran by women now, not exactly for women, but you know, there's just a lot of good stuff, good work, good values being pushed by this podcast and the people who work on it. And I, as a man, appreciate this. And you, as a very rich man, can probably also appreciate these values. And therefore, you should, you know, just drop a couple hundred million. Or whatever it takes to run a podcast these days.
You know, when I asked you what we do here, you were supposed to transition into One Piece stuff and not three more minutes of not our own podcast.
I couldn't.
Read the summary.
This week clearly on it seems One like you wanted Piece, to. We close the curtain on Law's relationship with Corazon. We open up with Corazon getting a call from Doflamingo asking both of them to come home since he's found the OPOP fruit. And he's certain that this is the cure they've both been looking for. Corazon calls Sengoku to confirm the information. And sure enough, the Navy has a deal to set up to secure the fruit with DS barrels for 5 billion berry. Corazon gets excited at this seemingly great prospect for Law when suddenly Law's health takes a nosedive. With no idea what else he can do, Corazon decides that he's going to steal the OPOP fruit himself, and in the coolest way possible. After mostly successfully retrieving the fruit, Corazon feeds it to Law before collapsing from his numerous gunshot wounds. He sends Law off with a secret letter to find help in the Navy. Law unfortunately runs into Vergo, a Doflamingo spy, hands him the letter, and leads him back to Corazon. I'm sure you can guess what happens next. But also, you saw the same episodes as us, right? Anyway, we fast forward to Doflamingo arriving on the island to retrieve the fruit, activating Birdcage, and all hell breaks loose. Realizing there's no way out, Corazon puts a silence Law into a chest, because pirates love treasure chests, and we proceed to witness the tragic but loving end of Corazon. And as Law walks away from the shoreline, wailing and crying, I finish this summary after being up for 20 hours. Also wailing and crying. Also, I wrote this like half a week ago. And honestly, I stumbled through my own summary because I barely remember this summary or the content of the episodes I watched like a couple days ago. Hope you enjoy.
I love that energy because even in the middle of this summary, you go, you guys watched these episodes, right? Like you just anticipated that there was going to be some kind of gap ahead of time. And you're like, everybody watched what I watched, right? Almost feels like a call out even.
Well, also, like I was talking to the people not in the room with us. I could be calling you out, I guess, or Devin.
Well, now you've sort of called yourself out though, because you're like, I I watch these episodes, right?
Well, I wasn't included in that group, but I could be.
No. Well, initially, I'm saying your art has transformed to represent you now because you're like, I wrote this like half a week ago and I'm not sure I remember.
You know, that's right.
Also, I like the part where randomly law was capitalized one time here.
Yeah, it's a good thing I read that because when I thought about you reading this potentially, I thought you were going to like see that. And instead of just reading it in normal speech, you would have just memed on me and go, Corazon feeds it to law before collapsing from his numerous gunshot wounds. And I'm like, all right, man, you don't have to do that to me. And then you would have circled back to me. It's like, hey, Justin, so like, why'd you randomly capitalize that? And then I would have to proceed to my upcoming explanation where when I'm typing, I use my pinky for the shift key to capitalize shit. And sometimes my pinky gets a little heavy and it doesn't come off the key right away.
And then you just leave it. You say, fuck it. And I don't
I didn't even notice it until like 30 minutes ago when I was like rereading my sheet to like remind myself of anything.
You didn't reread it when you finished it the first time?
You know, like I said, I was up for 20 hours. And mostly when I write these summaries, I'm like just gassed. So I'm like, finish the story. Finish. Just finish. And I'm like, cool, I finished. Slams laptop shut and collapses in exhaustion. And then I mostly don't ever come back to this until the day of recording.
You're also 100% correct. You know me a little too well. I would have absolutely capitalized my voice for that.
I would have spoken in all caps.
Read the text as it's written. Well, here we are, Justin. You remember the episodes?
A little bit. I definitely tried to scrub through the episodes again before recording, just to jog my memory. Well, I will say, comparing the experience of first watching and then trying to jog my memory a week later, when I'm first watching the episodes, it feels like, I don't want to say that everything's going slower, but it's like when I revisited it, it felt like there was less content the second time around, if that makes sense, where I was like, this story isn't as like heavy or filling as I first thought it was when I first watched it. It was like, oh, everything's going by faster, or there's not as many details as it felt like there was when I first watched it. I don't know if I'm making sense.
When you say, so, okay, you're talking about when you scrubbed through it today or when you watched these the other day?
When I scrubbed through it today, it felt like there was less content or less story or just an overall lighter experience, if that makes sense.
I think maybe that's just you scrubbing through and recognizing the things you recognize already and then just being like, oh yeah, that happened. And then like maybe things you didn't remember right away are the ones that stick out. So, and obviously that's going to be less than when you watched them a couple of days ago, because when you watched them a couple of days ago, that's the first time you've watched these episodes in like a couple of years probably. That then it's all fresh for you and your fish brain. This is you going like, all right, I remember that. I remember that. I remember that. Oh, right. That happened. I remember that. I remember that. Oh, that happened.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's why it probably feels like less.
You have accurately deciphered my experience for me. Thank you.
That's what I'm here for, bud. So we, I don't know. I mean, there's really, it's really just one long string of things that kind of happens here.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot to specifically break down into sections because it's all just,
it's all one large coherent story this time around. There's no like jumping around scene to scene. It's truly for the first time in a while, one storyline.
Yeah. And it's refreshing. It's nice to just kind of follow the same plot, the same thread for a couple of episodes and get a full narrative dive on it rather than the kind of typical jump around to different things and different actions people are taking plot line that One Piece tends to adopt these days, but then especially with the last two or three arcs. So in a way, these backstories are kind of refreshing for that sense, as well as obviously getting the lore on whatever character we're backstorying at the time. So sometimes backstory, not fun, but like, you know, occasionally it just doesn't hit, or I just don't care as much. But this is a moment where I want to know things because Law is a character we don't know about much about. And Then there's this character Corazon, obviously, that we've heard is dead. So we want to know exactly how their relationship has developed. And I think we've done a pretty good job of that, honestly. I think we've done a nice job kind of wrapping in the different feelings of the characters and understanding how Law has gotten to this point where he has plotted this revenge course for damn near half his life, pretty much.
Yeah.
On Doflamingo. Actually, it might have overtaken more than half of his life, because then he's like 10 in this, and this is like a 13-year-old flashback now. So
I think when we first introduced to him in the fucking bomber vest, he's 10 years old. Some time does pass. I want to say 2 to 3 years. Pass.
Yeah, we're at like 2-ish years right now when Corazon dies.
And then I want to say present day Law is 26.
I think that's right. I'm pretty sure that's right. Because the initial point of the flashback was 16 years ago from the present day. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he spent over half his life, or pretty much half of his life, dedicated to this revenge on Doflamingo. So it is,
that man
is basically consumed him.
That man is the living embodiment of living out of spite.
Yeah. Well, if you ask Corazon, he's not living out of spite. He's living for some other purpose, which I thought was like kind of a sweet sentiment, because most of Law's life after Flevence is decimated is essentially living out of spite. And it seems on the surface like Law lives out of spite. That's what he's been presented like. But Corazon would have you believe, especially as his life ends, that Law has some maybe even potentially higher purpose based off of all of the ways that Law's life keeps getting prolonged miraculously. So it's kind of nice having the display of Corazon be the one person at this point in Law's life that gives a shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then for Law to meet his crew, and which we haven't seen. I don't know if we'll ever actually see that or not, but seemingly my boy Beppo and company care about Law. So that part is also sweet.
I hope we get something about that. I don't actually know if we do, like if we get that information on screen, or it's fucking relegated to like a Viver card book or some shit. But I hope we get some like anime canon information presented to us.
It'd be kind of nice.
But we start from the beginning. Yeah. This is only one plot line. And the beginning is we pick back up to wherever island Law and Corazon are currently sitting on. Excuse me. And they get a phone call from Doflamingo, I believe. Dofie's like, hey, you guys been gone for like 6 months. You should come back, especially because I found the OPOP Nomi. And he's like, I think this is the cure you're looking for. And he's talking to Corazon. And he's like, I'm assuming Doflamingo knows or assumes that Corazon has an understanding of the fruit. And so he's like, oh, I'm going to have you eat it and cure Law. And yes, so that happens. And then Corazon is shocked. He's like, oh my God, I can't believe you found this broken ass devil fruit. Because I'm pretty sure Corazon knows about this perpetual youth surgery aspect to it.
100%.
And he's like, oh, my brother was going to like basically make me a sacrificial lamb for himself. But also at some point allegedly save Law prior to that. Yeah, so that happens. And then Corazon's shocked Pikachu face. He's like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll meet you at whatever island they agree to meet at. They have like a map with this triangulated area. There's like Sparrow Island and Minion Island. Minion Island is the only one that really matters here. So that happens. And then he immediately calls Sengoku to double check this information. When he's calling, Garp is in the room, and I think so is Aokiji from the sounds of the dialogue. I don't think Garp knows that's Corazon, from what I gather.
No, it didn't seem that way. Yeah. I don't think he even really heard what was going on the phone, the snail chat call in the first place, really.
That's true. It's just Garp telling him, or not Garp, excuse me, Sengoku's like, hey, I gotta get to work. Get the fuck out of here. He's like, but I just bought these crackers that we're supposed to share.
Eat these crackers with me, you fuck.
Yeah.
And make me some green tea.
Mm-hmm.
Also, side note, we get young Goku-kun in the same instance.
Why does young Goku-kun cool. look older than old Goku-kun? Unless it's just me.
I don't know. That might just be you. He looks big and youthful to me.
He definitely looks big. And I think the added size in my mind means like he's older. You know, like I associate the larger size with age.
Nah, dude, old people shrink.
That is true. So yeah, they start having a conversation and he's like, hey, can I ask you a question, Sengoku? He's like, sure, what's up? Is it true that the Navy is having a undercover deal with the pirate group to get the OP fruit? And Sengoku's like, how'd you hear about that? Who told you that? That's supposed to be top secret. He's like, well, it's not so top secret because my brother fucking heard about it before I did. And he's like, God damn it. Yeah, it's true. What about it? And he's filling him in on Doflamingo's plan. And side by side with this, on the other side of the line, Doflamingo hangs up and he's consulting Diamante and whoever else is present. And he's like, I think my brother's the mole. Because he points out that coincidentally, Suru, who was a vice admiral at this time, I believe, she's been tailing the Doflamingo crew rather closely and accurately for a while. And he notices that in the 6 months that Corazon has been gone, Suru, who's not shown up a single time. And he's like, that's too much of a coincidence. There's no way. But Diamante's like, no, that's just a coincidence. And Doflamingo's like, I hope you're right, because I would hate to have to kill my own family again. And so that happens. I don't know, you want to chime in here?
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to see some big brain Doflamingo moments again, to have him be working out this idea that Corazon is probably the mole that they've suspected is in the crew. And now we have a bit, and even kind of sprinkled in this too, it doesn't happen yet in the timeline of this, but we get even more Doflamingo backstory eventually, just in terms of when, because he has that line, like you just said, that he's like, I just sure would hate to have to kill my own flesh and blood once more. And we get the scene eventually in these episodes where Doflamingo shoots his father while his father is hugging Corazon, Rosinant at the moment. And he's very, very upset. And at some point in this backstory, again, still unclear really how it happens, but Rosinant gets separated from Doflamingo and ends up in the arms of the Navy. And that's how he gets picked up by the Navy when he's young. Because we were surmising just like what the fuck could have happened, that they, A, get out of the situation, which we get an answer for also, but then B, how Rosinant is taken away from Doflamingo in the first place. So we get the latter answer. The former answer is Doflamingo's got conqueror's hockey.
Yeah, they not so subtly refer to it. It's like, huh, yeah, everyone just passed out? Because in this flashback, it's really brief. There's not a whole lot of context here, but it is implied that at this moment, Doflamingo is friends with Virgo in some capacity, and Virgo, or both of them, work for Treble in some way.
Was it implied? It didn't seem like you knew Virgo.
That's what I picked up. So, because it's a really, really quick conversation and flashback where you see young Doflamingo and he's talking to Treble and Virgo. And Virgo says, hey, this is, I think Treble says, like, or not Treble, excuse me. Virgo says, this is our boss, Treble. And then they just have that quick conversation of like, hey, so like everyone just passed out. And then Treble's like making him these offers, like, do you want like the power to do XYZ kind of thing?
I think when Virgo refers to Treble as our boss, mm-hmm. I think Virgo is already in Treble's group, yes, of misfits in the family. And he's just saying, it doesn't seem like he knows Doflamingo. He might have maybe he'd been tailing Doflamingo at this point, but it seems like he hadn't made his presence known. He might have been watching Doflamingo or had just seen what happened there in the first place. And so, but yeah, then we get this thing about Treble being the boss. And so clearly this, you know, quote unquote family, however it existed before Doflamingo, he's introduced, becomes the most powerful entity. And then Treble, it seems, relinquishes head of the family, quote unquote, to Doflamingo, seeing as he's the most powerful one there. So that's how we kind of get this situation where Doflamingo is the leader of this group of people now and not Treble. But it was kind of weird seeing that Treble was the boss of anybody at any point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess
I can see it, because out of a lot of the other higher level executives like Diamante and Pika, I guess Treble is the one who makes the most sense. Diamante is just kind of a loose cannon who wants to fight people and sleep. So like Zoro, but evil. And then Pika, I don't know, is mostly silent because he doesn't want people to laugh at his voice. He would just kill them anyway, but I guess that sort of doesn't lend itself well to leading people. So, you know, I guess it's fine. I'm not putting too much stock into it. It's just like a thing that they drop on us. And I'm like, oh, okay, that was cool. Why not? The most important thing here is Conqueror's Haki, I think.
But I couldn't help but linger on this moment and ask myself if whether or not Treble is truly like the mastermind behind all of this. Like, we have the literal puppet master in Doflamingo, but what if Treble has been like stringing him along this entire time?
Who puppets the puppet master?
Yeah. And then I don't have an answer for that. It's just a question I have lingering in my mind. And it made me think of another question of, so we see that throughout these episodes, especially when it becomes explicit later on, Doflamingo is really heavy on found family or created family as opposed to blood relatives, because that's just gone so south for him in his eyes. And it makes me wonder, what does Doflamingo offer his executives, his partners in crime, if you will, that encourage them to stick around? And we don't have an answer for that as far as I know, but that is also a question I have in my mind of like, what does this guy do for you that you are so loyal to him? Especially when he's like, you know, clearly a manipulator. And I'm like, listen, like, is it possible that he's like, he's got good tendencies, at least to the people who are loyal to him? Yeah. But this guy's like pure unadulterated evil. And so I'm not giving him that much credit. At least not yet.
I'm not gonna put stock in he's secretly got a soft side. I'm going to put stock in he's probably stuck his neck out for, if not each of them individually, the group as a whole several times across his life at that point. So he's earned their loyalty by being someone they can rely on in one way or another, whether it's maybe they fell on hard times and Doflamingo made them some money, or if in literal fights where he's saved their lives or something. And so just across the board, and seemingly they have this kind of soft spot for maybe people that are a bit downtrodden and they take in and down on their luck sort of thing. I don't have a great basis for that, but Doflamingo kind of just take, and especially whenever Doflamingo takes in people for the family, like we see when he takes in Law's got the crazy in his eye, and it's the same crazy that Doflamingo's got. So maybe to some extent, it's a little bit of that also. We also have yet to see who was already in the family when Doflamingo joins as a child. So Vargo was there, Treble was the lead, but who else was present at that point? We don't know yet. Will we ever know? Who knows? But it's also part of it where anyone who existed already would have just watched Doflamingo grow up into this person. And that's kind of, it's kind of where I'm at, where their loyalty is to someone who saved them in some way, shape, or form, or they also just want to see the world burn.
That is fair. I hope we get an answer to this. But also, God, what was it that you just said? It was like, oh yeah, you were talking about like maybe everyone in the crew was like down on their luck in some capacity. Because, you know, we see that with Law, who's like, who would think any otherwise for any other member? And so I'm once again coming to you to say, what if I told you Senor Pink is going to make you cry one day?
I refuse. I refuse. I deny it with every bone in my body.
I can't wait to revisit this allegedly sometime. So moving on.
Unless him and Frankie have some incredible heart-to-heart moment, then I don't see myself crying for Senor Pink. I'm down for more breakdancing battles, but I don't think I care outside of that.
Well, there's only time will tell, hopefully.
I'm willing to change my mind, but I'm going to, at this moment, refuse with every fiber of my being.
That is perfectly acceptable at this moment in time. We will see what time does for you or anyone else in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to the plot line here, there's a conversation with Sengoku. The two hash it out a plan where Corazon's like, hey, I'm going to go back to my brother 3 days before this operation goes down. And then we can like pincer maneuver Doflamingo, bamboozle him, blah, 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 him and the Navy. However, Corazon decides to go rogue for both sides here. And he's like, I'm going to steal their fruit from not only my brother, but the Navy. I'm an enemy to everyone because he wants to save Law. Who is taking a turn for the worst at this very particular moment. His disease is doing him under rather rapidly. So they sail out in a stormy sea over to Minion Island, where DS Barrels and his pirate crew are, you know, shacked up. They're just waiting for the deal to go down with the Navy. You know, it's kind of funny in a stupid way where DS Barrels has this scene where he's talking to his crew of like, yeah, man, this fruit is like really broken, probably. Like he's hyping up the devil fruit. And then he just goes, yeah, but I'd rather have fucking $5 billion. They can do whatever the fuck they want with this fruit. And I'm just here like, wow, you seem dumb, but whatever. You know, the crew is just like, oh, you know, once you get all this money, we don't have to be a pirate anymore, which I guess is kind of respectable because being a pirate isn't fun unless you're like super strong and bad. When you're like kind of mid, you're fighting for your life every day. And honestly, yeah, I wouldn't want to live like that.
I'm not sure I could take I would think otherwise either. I think I would take $5 billion over the superpower.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That is fair.
Especially a superpower that I don't know how to use.
True.
Because I seem to understand that it's the op-op fruit and that, like, if you're a doctor, it's worthwhile. But if you're just a schmuck, it's like, I don't know. I make a cut here. Oops. I accidentally cut his liver out. I don't know how to put it back.
I was a little confused and disappointed when, I'll hold this thought for when we get there. So we have this scene with DS Barrels. What's his face? Corazon hides Law in like an outhouse. He's like, hey, stay here. I'll be back. I'm going to get the fruit. It's dangerous. Shut up. Runs over to the hideout for these pirates. And possibly one of the coolest action scenes I've seen in this show.
So sick.
It's really interesting you have all the noise and the clamor of the pirates just like hanging out, eating, talking shit. And then anytime Corazon's on scene, it just goes hush. And it's a really nice juxtaposition of Corazon fucking throws a grenade through the window. And then you like, I don't know if you hear the window break, but the guys are like, what the fuck was that? And then grenade goes off, but it's silent. And the Corazon fucking barrel rolls into the room, silent. Knocks out one goon, silent. Everyone's like, bodies are dropping, but I can't hear them. What's going on? And it's really cool.
Shoots out the candle lights so it's dark in the first place. Mm-hmm. And you can't hear it because everything he interacts with, and including projectiles, goes silent. So anything he touches no longer produces sound at all. So he shoots out the lights, silent. It's dark. And then he's jumping fools. And he gets to DS Barrels, knocks the fuck out of him, steals the fruit, and then he's just gone. Not even the wind, because even the wind makes noise. He's just gone. But he unfortunately runs by two other goons that are sitting outside. And so they notice him, and they recognize eventually that he's the one, when they meet up with other guys in the hideout, that the fruit has been stolen. But I agree. I think this is one of the few, the sound design across the entire show has had really good moments, and mm-hmm. but they're mostly tied to music inserts. But this is the exact opposite. This is the lack of any sound. And I think they do it very well with the mixes between what ends up making noise and then the cut-ins of just complete silence when Corazon is doing stuff on screen and is interacting, breaking things, breaking necks, breaking windows. It's really, not only is it like, I just enjoy stealth sequences like this, both in movies and video games and anime, whatever the case is. But now there's this added layer with the sound effects or the lack thereof. And I just think it was really cool. I think this is one of the most fun sound design moments in the shows thus far.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I can't think of, granted, for a long time I wasn't as attentive to this type of detail prior to like having a podcast, I guess, where I was like, oh, you know, I'm here for visual aids. I'm not really paying enough attention to sound design. Now I'm more open to it and I'm like, this is sick. And I can't think of like anything that even comes close to this shit for the rest of the series. But maybe I'll be wrong as we progress. But this is some top notch shit.
This is that good, this is that Wagyu sound design. This is that A1 Wagyu, or what is the highest tier of Wagyu? Is it five?
Does
it,
I think so.
Is that what it does? A5 Japanese Wagyu beef right here.
USDA certified.
Mwah.
Straight from the finest cows in insert Japanese province that OG Wagyu comes from. I don't remember. I don't know. Is it Kyoto? That's probably not right. Anyway, fantastic scene. It's amazing. And then naturally, Corazon fucks it up by being clumsy, gets cornered, gets riddled with bullets, but somehow walks away from that situation. Finds Law. He's like, hey, buddy, got the fruit. And
force feeds the shit out of him.
Law is just like talking. I don't even remember what Law says, but Corazon's like, shut up. Go munch munch. And the entire time this is happening, I'm thinking about the fact that any person who wants a devil fruit power, all you have to do is literally take like the smallest nibble and you'll get the power. But everyone is incessant, or maybe not everybody. In this very particular moment, Corazon is incessant that Law eats the entire thing. And he does. But he doesn't like take a bite out of it. He just like swallows it whole because it's force fed down his throat. And I was like, I was kind of laughing to myself. I'm like, we don't need to do this.
I don't know that anyone in this universe knows that if you just take a bite, like you get the power. Like, I think
that is true. I think very few people know that.
I think most generally have the understanding that you have to eat the whole thing. And not only that, that you're compelled as the person who took a bite to eat the whole
thing. That is true.
Thing. So even if it tastes like garbage,
which is wild. It's like, oh, man, that was awful. I want to do it again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Actually, that's kind of relatable, but different context. Anyway. So yeah, Law eats the fruit and he feels some change happen to him. And he's like, all right, cool. I ate the fruit. What now? And then Corazon collapses from his injuries. And what I was a little confused by is, from my understanding up until this point, it is made clear to us that when you get a devil fruit power, you're supposed to just kind of have a baseline understanding of how shit works for your fruit. Maybe you don't have like a master's level understanding, but like you understand the basics of it and you could just kind of use it like instinctually. Law doesn't seem to have that understanding with his fruit for some reason. He's like, he hasn't activated a room. He hasn't done anything. He's like actively trying to figure out what the fuck to do. He's like, abracadabra, heal him. Go, gadget, fix him up.
Surgery.
Yeah. And he's like, why isn't this working? And I was asking myself that too. I was like, okay, I can understand him not understanding the intricate details of things, but like, bro, he can't even open a room. What's going on? I just think it's a weird disconnect.
I was a little confused at first by it too, that he didn't really have or didn't show that he knew that the knowledge was transferred into his brain magically. At the same time, though, when I thought about it a little bit more, there's like a couple different factors where it's a very stressful situation where, and he's a kid and the only person he gives a shit about in the world is dying in front of him now. So maybe it's anxiety stopping him from activating the power properly or really accessing the knowledge in the right way, or maybe even what even is the baseline of the op fruit? Like, what is the basic form? Like, is room the basic form? Is one of the other things that he does, like, when he uses the taser version or something like that? Like, where does the power start? And so, or maybe even this could be even more basic in the sense that we've already established that room has like, or draws from an energy reserve, and Law being in that weakened state already from basically being dead, maybe doesn't have that yet, or it needed to like, what he got the power. Boom. All right. It's like buying a toy from the store maybe it'd be more apt to say like you're buying a new phone. You bought the phone, but it's not charged. You got to charge it for the first time in order to use it or something like that. So like Law's room reserve is now boom. He's got it now, but it's empty. He's got to rest and fill it or something like that. So there's a couple different ways. Maybe Oda didn't think of any of this, and it was just convenient for the plot that he didn't know how to do it anymore, or it was just, or not anymore. He didn't know how to do it yet. Who knows? But either way, this is kind of the excuse line that I came up with for Law.
It seems plausible. I was thinking to myself, like, maybe the op fruit is like the exception because it's so intricate compared to other fruits we've seen so far. But that's probably just me coping. But that's what I came up with. So it's not any better or worse than what you proposed here. So yeah, we have this moment. This Corazon's dying. Law doesn't know how to fucking save him. And so Corazon is just like, hey, don't worry about me. Get out of here before Doflamingo shows up. And so he gives Law this like capsule of information. Like, it's basically like giving him a version of a USB drive of like, hey, everything on this thumbstick is going to take down the Don Quixote family. Give it to the Navy and also make sure you get yourself taken care of. And so Law, who's very apprehensive because he doesn't trust the Navy, I don't know if he explained it this week or last week, where he was like, the Navy is the reason like my life went to shit. Like the Navy like destroyed Flevance. They killed my family, killed everybody I love. So I don't trust them. And he even asked Corazon, like, hey, are you with the Navy? He's like, no, I'm definitely playing both sides. Because Corazon recognizes this. He's like, oh, well, I don't want this kid to like not trust me now in like his most dire moments. So I'm like, just gonna lie to him. So Law is like, all right, I trust you enough to follow through with this plan that I really don't want to do. So he starts walking out to the coastline toward a ship, and he comes across a group of Navy personnel, and he just kind of gets, you know, scared off by them. I guess just know the sheer numbers, he'd rather have a one-on-one. And so eventually a couple minutes later, he runs into a single Marine, and he's like, hey, can you help me? And he gives him this capsule of information, and lo and behold, it's Vergo, who Law doesn't know about or know what he looks like.
Knows only by name.
Yeah, only knows him by name, and it's very like touch and go. And so Vergo's like, oh, this seems like really important information. The back is like, where the fuck did this kid get this from? Yeah, I'll keep this information real safe, little boy.
Well, he hasn't looked at it yet. He's like, oh, little kid's got one of these Navy capsule things, which means it's important. I'll take care of this at some point. And then later he learns what exactly is on it.
Across some wires.
When Law leads him to Corazon, Vergo goes, huh? And then he opens the capsule and he's like, oh, okay, I see now. And then he beats the shit out of them both.
He beats the brakes out of both of them. He kicks the shit out of Corazon. And then Law's like, hey, what the fuck's going on? I thought you guys were cool with each other. And he's like, little boy, if you've heard my name before within the Don Quixote family, then that means you should recognize that I'm your like elder, and you should be respectful and call me Vergo Senpai. And then just beats the shit out of Law, knocks him out. And I'm like, my God, I understand why Law had so much prejudice out on Punk Hazard.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense now why he did what he did to Vergo on Punk Hazard.
That was crazy.
By the way, quick question.
Yeah,
I don't remember for some reason it sticks out in my head as fact that we've already covered this or it's been established already, but it's also possible I've just made this assumption. Vergo was the first Corazon, right?
Yes, that was established, I think. I think it was last week, but I could be wrong.
I don't think it was last week. It was definitely been at least over a week, mm-hmm. But okay. There was a certain venom to the way he refers to Corazon as the second Corazon. Yeah. So, and then he punches him in the face or kicks him or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I just couldn't remember if it had been established or if I had just made my own headcanon at the time.
No, that's true. That's canon. That's real world canon. So, yeah, he beats the shit out of both of them, calls Doflamingo. He's like, hey, I found the mole. Your brother really, really tried to do you under. Like my man, he could have fucked us all over. And Doflamingo's like, well, I guess he's got to die, but he's going to be by my hands. He's my brother. And then, naturally, plot happens and the two manage to walk away from Corazon, or excuse me, from Vergo while this conversation is happening. They hide out. And I don't know if there's much conversation happening between Corazon and Law at this moment. But around this time where Doflamingo shows up on the island and he's like, oh, well, we can't fool my brother, but don't worry, that won't be much of a problem. Activates Birdcage. He's like, we'll find him eventually. He's not going very far. And so the two of them recognize this ability activating. Corazon's like, you know, I don't know if Corazon said he's seen the ability before, but he's heard about it.
He had not. He had no idea what this was, but knew that it was Doflamingo.
Yeah, he was like, I don't actually know what's going on, but I know it's not good, and I can pretty much tell we're fucked. And so he comes up with the hot plan of, it's really fucking stupid.
It's pretty,
and I can't believe
it's
it
pretty
worked.
One Piece.
Doflamingo's like, okay, I can't do anything about this. So what I'm going to do is, I'm going to take Law, I'm going to put him in a treasure chest.
Corazon.
Sorry. Yeah, Corazon's going to put Law in a treasure chest because pirates love treasure chests and they can't stop themselves from just picking anyone up.
They won't open it. They'll just take it.
They'll just take it.
We definitely have seen multiple instances, even recently, of pirates going, ooh, look at all the gold in this chest. Doesn't matter here. We're just going like, ah, yeah, the pirates, they just take treasure and they don't ask questions. Sure.
So he does that as like the escape plan. He's like, hey, when like, you know, they find me and they kill me, they're going to take you in the chest and like carry you to safety, allegedly, somehow. Not sure how the fuck that works. But anyway, so Corazon hides Law in the chest, uses his silence ability on the chest and or Law. He's like, hey, you'll never make a sound. They'll never really find you no matter what. So Corazon goes to distract the family, gets caught, has some dialogue with his brother, and they have this standoff. So words are shared. I don't remember exactly the dialogue going on here, but it ends with Doflamingo killing his brother with the same gun he used to kill his father, which is just poetic. What a detail. What a fucking detail to add.
Yeah. And they have the moment where they make sure you recognize this earlier in the episodes, where he's staring down at the, quite frankly, tiny looking gun in his hands, by the way. And Doflamingo's massive frame.
Yeah.
The gun is like the size of his palm. But it's a normal sized gun for this universe anyway. And then you have the flashback, like I mentioned earlier, about him killing his dad and Rosinante getting taken by the Navy. But yes, they make sure to hammer that one home, that particular parallel.
Very, very, very strange. Not strange, but like what a detail. And so Corazon is, you know, deemed dead by the family, and you know, they start to make their way off the island with Law in tow, because of course they grabbed his fucking chest. And Corazon's like, okay, they grab Law, that's great. Actually, hold on, before this even happens, there is a small but important detail thrown out at us. Baby Five and Buffalo are doing like reconnaissance between the islands they're nearby and Minion Island, and they hear a report from the Navy saying they found a young boy, and so they're gonna like take care of him.
We had scenes previously of the kid wandering, running around the island and like trying to get away in the chaos, seemingly.
So what I thought was happening when this report was made was that either Corazon had coordinated this information to be told on the airwave, where he was like, hey, like Suru Sengoku, I need you to put out like,
oh,
I need you to say this on the airwaves to fool the family so I can like get Law to safety. And that's not what happened.
No, there's a scene. There's a scene earlier where, like, right before that, where you see the kid, get found by Navy people, and then Baby Five and Buffalo see that, or whatever the case is, and then they report it. So you already have that you already have that context, if you've remembered it anyway.
I remember they showed the kid, who I'll talk about in a second, but I understood it as Baby Five and Buffalo hear this report. They then fly over to Doflamingo as fast as they can to relay that information. And that same frame, Corazon is first hearing about it. And then as this information is being shared with everybody, we get a glance over to the Marine ship of some kid who's not Law washing up on the ship, right?
Well, that's the point. That's like the second time we've seen him with the Navy.
That's my bad.
That's the shot of him like crouching or sitting on the boat or something. And yeah, that's the second time we see him. The first time he's like on the shores or something, and he meets up with a group of them.
I completely missed that detail. Unless I bamboozled myself and I still maybe thought that was Law, but in my skipping about, I definitely didn't pick up on that.
I don't know how you did that. Yeah, I don't know how you did that.
Who knows? So we figure out it's not Law, obviously. Do you know who that kid is?
I do.
Please align the people.
I'm so happy. That maybe it's obvious. I don't know. But that kid is ex-Drake. As I would figure out shortly thereafter, Diaz Drake. Because it's not an X, it's a 10.
Yep.
it's Roman numeral 10, baby. And I looked at the kid. And at first, when he shows up, I was like, all right, random kid. And then I paid attention to the scar on his chin. And I was like, wait a minute. That looks oddly familiar. And also way too specific to just be a coincidence. And I realized after a quick bit of thinking that it was definitely X-Drake, because I also remembered him being a ginger. So and then later on when they bring up Diaz barrels again and they're talking about the brat that's gone missing. Yeah. I was like, Diaz, 10X.
it was during that scene where
all the pieces fall into place.
His dad is going on about like, oh, my stupid fucking, or the stupid kid. He doesn't like, if he was, he's like so powerful, but he's a fucking coward. And I was like, that's a really odd statement to just make about a runaway that like doesn't matter. And then he matters a little bit more. And I'm like, let me look into this. This seems familiar for some reason. I just can't explain why. And then I dig the wiki. I'm like, oh, that's why.
So you didn't even realize in the episodes while you were watching them,
I had to confirm. Yeah. I may have had like a suspicion. Who was calling me? No.
Ring, ring, Progresso. It's X-Drake coming to kill you now that you know his identity.
BRB.
Oh, I'm all alone with the audience once again. It's been a while since this happened. How you doing, guys? I hope you're doing well. I've been doing all right so far.
All right,
as of right now. Oh, hey, what's up?
That was a call.
Was that X-Drake coming to silence you for knowing his real name?
If it was, he was typing into the keypad, which meant I wasn't meant to pick up. They're trying to probably answer the voicemail or something. But anyway, so yeah, I definitely had a suspicion about what was going on with X-Drake, but like I needed the help of the wiki to be like, is this what I'm thinking?
Yeah.
And thankfully I did, because I then learned. So Diaz Barrels was a former Navy personnel turned pirate. And that is the exact same backstory as X-Drake, as we learned down the road when we first get introduced to him in Saba Odie. So I just thought that was a fun detail.
The apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Nope.
Although we're in a very heavy like double agent mode right now.
That's true.
So all I'm saying is like, surely they wouldn't do the same thing twice with the Diaz family, where dad was Marine turned into pirate, and now we've got son who seemingly he ran away for a purpose, right? Like he doesn't like his dad. So if I know people like that, they tend to not want to be anything like the parent that they hated.
Oh,
even if sometimes they might fall into those categories still, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. What if Diaz Drake is still a Navy Marine in the present day, and he's just an undercover pirate?
That is interesting.
This whole arc has been about like secret undercover agents is all I'm saying.
That is fair.
I know that sounds hypocritical because I'm like, oh, we did the thing where Navy turned pirate with the dad, so why would we do it again? And we already have two different secret agents, with Corazon being Navy undercover pirate and then Vergo being pirate undercover Navy. Why would we do it a third time with Drake? But my argument, what I say to you is shut up.
Fair
and
enough.
Also, it hasn't happened yet. This is the past. Anything happened in the past.
That is true. You know, I'm not saying this falls in line with what I'm going to say next, but it could. Because I was, when I made this realization, I thought to myself, you know, in a kind of sort of way, Law and X-Drake have like a history together. Like, granted, it's distant and it's more of a serendipitous moment, but like their lives have crossed paths, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't help but feel like this is a detail that Oda could like build upon in the future. Like, I'm not going to say that, like, you know, Oda's going to be like, oh, Law and X-Drake are going to team up because they shared something with the Navy or whatever, blah, blah, blah. I don't think it's going to be that deep, or it's not going to stem from that situation exactly. But I think Oda could like make something happen where these two cross paths again, but like more directly. And so what you're saying or proposing could play into that.
I definitely agree with you. I think this is too oddly specific of a detail to kind of just throw in. Like, sure, it's nice to have X-Drake backstory when I didn't ask for it, but it's here as part of somebody else slightly more important's backstory. So it stands to reason that this isn't just going to end up being happenstance, because again, like you said, they don't actually cross paths. This is just they happen to be in the same place at the same time type moment.
Mm-hmm.
So they're both just children on this island, although X-Drake seemingly is a little bit older. He seems to be more teenage years than Law. Law is still a kid. And so it makes sense to me that there would end up being more relevance to the fact that they were both here at this time experiencing Doflamingo. But it doesn't even have to be Doflamingo, because Drake wouldn't even really know that it's Doflamingo. He's just kind of running, taking advantage of the chaos. Yeah, I don't know what the relevance will be in the future, but it makes sense to me that what you're saying, that this specific time frame, this moment, will become useful for the two of them in the plot at some point, whether it's something they specifically do or Luffy and company is present, who knows, doesn't really matter, but it will be relevant in the future, I'm sure.
Yeah, we have. So what else goes on here? Not much else happens other than Law is, you know, kind of brought to safety through some bamboozling and some coincidences, essentially. And then we get this heartbreaking scene of Law's crawling out of the chest, trying to, you know, just walk his way slowly to safety, wherever that is exactly on the island. And we get that monologue from Corazon of just like, okay, everyone's gone. Law is probably being brought to safety. He's probably okay. I just got to stay alive long enough to really make sure Law can get away with no one ever noticing. And so, you know, Corazon's just like holding out as long as he can, talking to himself, saying his like final words to himself. And we just get the heartbreaking scene of Law's running away, wailing, crying. He is distraught. And the only time he is, his sound comes through and is finally covered up outside of Corazon is the sounds of fucking warship artillery hitting the shoreline, and then that's where our episodes end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when Corazon dies, the effect of the fruit will wear off, and so you just have this long walk Law is doing silently.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually you don't see Corazon actually. You see his corpse eventually, but it's just Law walking. He's silently crying, and then suddenly you can hear him again.
Mm-hmm.
And at that moment, you know, and Law also probably knows.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very well done death scene for Corazon, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you think the backstory is over?
I think maybe if they were going to add anything, it would be sort of what Law did in the interim.
Mm-hmm.
So the next 13 years maybe will be kind of covered, and that will be sort of what might happen. But honestly, I don't know what else I would want to see outside of like him meeting and forming his pirate crew, maybe.
Mm-hmm. All right. I mean, I feel the exact same way. I definitely want to see what happens in the in-between, especially him meeting his crew. That matters to me the most. Besides how Law presumably figures out how to cure himself of his amber lead disease. But yeah, that's everything covered up rather neatly. Anything you want to talk about, mention before we move on?
I'm scrolling through my notes quickly, but I don't think there really is. I think most of what we've talked about is everything that I really wanted to.
Then before we move on, I'll just do these two little quick facts I came across. So I was going through Corazon's wiki, and someone wrote that the dynamic that exists between Virago and Corazon and like their positions in the story and in the Don Quixote family resembles the 2002 Chinese film Internal Affairs, where the plot is about two people work for a kingpin. One is a cop pretending to be a criminal, and the other is a criminal inside of the police system pretending to be a cop. So you have moles running both ways. And essentially the same plot line works out, where you have a Corazon of sorts trying to take down the kingpin, but he unintuitively runs into a Virago character and everything falls apart. What I learned was Internal Affairs was a trilogy of movies. Recently got me remastered in like 2022, I believe. But this movie, it was made in China. The story was retold by Martin Scorsese in the 2006 film The Departed, which I had no idea about. I've heard that movie's name here and there, but if I saw it, I was obviously like a really little kid and did not revisit it. But that sounds really cool for, you know, a basic plot. I know that film is like star-studded. It's like produced by Brad Pitt. I'm pretty sure it stars him in some capacity. I think DiCaprio is like a main character in there. You got fucking Charlie Sheen, a bunch of like A-list actors in that movie. So I just thought that was pretty cool to mention. And then also
Corazon hates bread.
Mm-hmm. Just like Law.
Does Corazon hate bread? When was that a thing?
That was something brought up in SBS. Someone asked what his favorite foods, and Oda was like, he likes cabbage, some other thing, and this thing called umeboshi, which umeboshi I think is supposed to be like a pickled plum or a pickled some type of fruit native to Japan, like apricot kind of thing. But then he mentions that, like, oh, Corazon also hates bread and some other random thing, just like Law hates bread. But also, I think Law hates umeboshi, but Corazon couldn't give that up for him, apparently. I thought that was a funny little detail worth mentioning. But moving on. Next week's episodes are 700. I did not update that. Whoops. Hold on. Please hold. Go to my episode list. Next week's episodes are 707 to 709. Let me write that down before I forget. Oh, what did I just do? Oh, no. I just deleted my summary. Oops. Well, we don't need that anyway.
Thank you. I got it.
Moving on to quotes. I will go first because I only have the one. Where did I write that, actually? Right here. Here. It's a quote by Corazon right before he, I think, walks off to 1v1 his brother, essentially. He says, "I'll die with a smile. Because if you remember me someday, I'd rather you remember me by my smile." That just seemed good.
And then it gives Law that nightmare-inducing smile.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so terrible. It's kind of a funny trope, though, of like characters wanting to be sweet and sentimental and then just achieving the opposite.
Just nightmare fuel.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. It doesn't help that he has Joker makeup, and so he's very like, "Hey, you want to know how I got these scars?" Version of himself right now. Even though we've seen him genuinely smile and laugh, but when he's trying to force it in these specific moments where he's like, "I'm gonna smile so that Law, so this is the last thing Law sees," and it's just nightmare fuel. Yeah,
all right, that's my only quote.
So I also had that one. No need to repeat it. The next one is okay. So I got a couple here that I could also read. Most are Corazon, but I have one Doflamingo that I thought was very interesting. I'll start off with a Corazon one that I've basically gone over already. So I'll just be reiterating myself with the actual quote. Corazon says, as he's dying, or is it? Yeah, either way, I'm just going to read it. "As I thought, Law, something compels you to stay alive. Saviors keep descending upon you one after another." I think this is actually not when he's dying yet. This is when Buffalo and Baby Five return and they make the report about some kid having been picked up by the Navy right after Corazon gives this as the excuse. So he's thinking to himself how oddly coincidental it is that Law is being saved by something outside of his own control again, even though Law really just up to that point wanted to die. He just wanted it to be over. So I thought that was very cool. And to build on top of that, when Corazon is dying, he says to himself, "Go farther and farther. There is nothing to bind you down anymore. Whether it's the iron border barrier of White Town or a short life expectancy, nothing and no one will limit you." And I just, I really like the lengths at which Corazon has come to care about Law on this really deep level in just essentially 6 months that they've spent on the road together. So it's very nice and I enjoy it a lot. Now, on to a quote from Doflamingo to ruin the good vibes. The quote from him is when they're having this face off, and I don't remember if he's yet shot Corazon or not, but Doflamingo exclaims, "You're so much like your father, not our father." So I thought that that's an interesting way for Doflamingo to put that. And there's two reasons that I could come up with. One, I think, is a little bit more outlandish than potentially is necessary for the plot as it stands. The more reasonable one is that Doflamingo just obviously has denounced his father, no longer considers himself as the son of that man, maybe even never did in the first place. So, but because he was just so different from the rest of his family, Rosinante, as we've already previously mentioned, very much falls in line with the values and sort of connections that he emotionally makes. They fall in line with the way his mother and father operate. And Doflamingo just does not. The slightly more outlandish version of the reason for this quote is, and again, knowing his mother and father, probably not the case. But what if they were only actually half brothers and Doflamingo really was born to a different, I guess, probably father in this case. Well, yeah, it would have to, not even probably, it would have to be father, a different father. Is it true? I don't know how, I don't know how the celestial dragons operate. There could have been a time where mom was married or with another guy at some point. Who knows? Is that really that now? Is this really that relevant to the plot? Not really. Corazon's dead now. And so whoever, I mean, maybe it could be the case that whatever celestial dragon that, if this were fact, whatever celestial dragon Doflamingo is actually related to could come up later in the show. But also, who knows if Doflamingo will be relevant to the plot after Dressrosa? I certainly don't know. I can't even really say that because we got Crocodile back. But in some cases, we don't revisit villains that we've already dealt with, but it happens from time to time. So Doflamingo could come back. Can't be written off entirely. So maybe if this is the case where they have two different fathers, his actual father will become relevant to the plot in some way. So I'm gonna keep that open. I'm just gonna throw that out there. And if I'm right about it, then I'm just god tier big brain. And if I'm wrong about it, I had fun. It's a win-win for me. That's all my quotes. I'm good. I've done it.
Got it. Cool. Moving on to Golden Ham. I'm pretty sure we don't need to consult much on this one. Are we just going to run it back?
I agree. Let's say both of our answers on three.
All right.
One, two, three. Corazon. Diaz Drake. Whoa, I can't believe this happened. How do we have different answers?
You want to know what's crazy? For the meme, I was really going to say Law.
Should have done it. Would have been different anyway.
I was just thinking back to the episode. I don't know if it came out today. No, it didn't come out today. It was like weeks ago. But where the week Usopp won it for his shot on Sugar. I know I brought someone else to the table. I think I brought fucking Barto. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I meant that nomination, but like, I knew the answer should and will be Usopp. And so I didn't want to repeat that for some reason. I was like, I don't want to disrespect Corazon. We're going to do this. And here you are. It's like, nah, bro, I got the meme this week.
Yeah, I got the meme hot off the presses. It's not even like my reasoning isn't even really a meme, although I am happy that I figured out that it was X Drake on my own. My reasoning really behind X Drake is that it, and also, I mean, I would be lying if I said there isn't a little bit of like, oh, well, Corazon got it last week. He got a golden hand.
Out of here.
My reasoning for you that I'm here to present is that he is the one effectively that gets Law out of the situation. He didn't mean to, but the accidental serendipity of him matching up with Corazon's story is what is compelling me to be like, what if we just gave it to X Drake though?
Nah, bro. Maybe on any other week against any other competition, I'd be down for this, but certainly not this week. If Corazon just did not exist in these episodes in particular, maybe, but like he does, and therefore it's going to be Corazon, and you can't really shake my mind on this one.
All right. Well, I tried.
I can't tell if there's going to be a wave of people who respect you or hate you for this. Only time will tell.
Both. Definitely both.
We're moving on to fan mail this week. We got an email from Taco, and Taco writes, "Hello there, let him cook emoji. Join our Discord, by the way. I was driving home today and was staring at my pickled foot water bottle, which I got from redbubble.com/pandasightings. I remembered how Zeph lost his right leg and Kuros lost his left, and also with Shanks losing his left arm, somehow the word flesh mecha came into my mind. Now I'm mad and seek vengeance. My task for you is to create the forbidden Exodia by adding parts from other One Piece characters, living or dead. You can finish what I started or start from scratch. Anyways, smoke bomb."
I feel like I've loosely brought up this idea. I mean, maybe it was only in regards to the legs. I hadn't thrown Shanks into the mix, but I've definitely brought up the two legs. Are there any, I don't think there's any other characters we've met that have been missing an arm, right?
I was thinking of Axe Hand Morgan, and I was like, that's probably his left arm too, which kind of sucks.
You should look that up, actually.
Say less.
I'm surprised you just didn't when you thought of it. I think it is also his left, though. I think I...
No, it's his right!
Is it his right?
It's his right!
We got the right hand of Axe Hand Morgan.
We got the right hand of Axe Hand Morgan. Let's go.
Oh, that's awesome.
For a head, I just immediately thought of Buggy because it felt easy.
That's a pretty good one. You can... Because he already detaches his head from places, and it's the only way that the character isn't dead. So
exactly,
unless Law just takes somebody's random person's head and puts it on top of Exodia. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh, this is great! Yeah, this is perfect. This works so good. You know, when I hadn't thought, Captain Axe Hand Morgan, such a good pull. I was thinking, and it's probably not even true, but the zombie swordsman Ryuma, I couldn't remember if he had both of his arms or not. I think he did. I was hoping that maybe he didn't, but it also probably wouldn't have been his right even, which we need. But it doesn't matter because we have Captain Morgan to take that spot. Oh wow, this is great. So we got left leg of Kyros, right leg of Zeph, right arm of Captain Morgan, and left arm of Shanks, and head of Buggy.
Head of Buggy. This is great. I love this.
This is awesome. this is awesome. Oh, I'm so happy.
If there are any artists out there who want to dare to try and put this puzzle together for us in one singular creation.
You don't even have to like make the whole body. Like you don't have to draw the person. Make them in the Yu-Gi-Oh card style, or like make a fake card frame and like put the different body limbs in there. Oh, that'd be so good. And then make them into real cards and ship them to me. I don't know how you would do that because we don't have a P.O. box or anything, but I might contemplate opening one up temporarily just for you to send me those. Oh, that'd be so incredible.
That I love this. This is great. Thank you, Taco. This email and this segment turned out way better than I could have ever imagined. That's great. I love that. Moving on to Patreon shoutouts, Twigo, Taco, and Rin, we appreciate you. We love you and all our patrons out there supporting us and funding the show and all the fun stuff we do every once in a while. Couldn't do it without you. And so we move on to my favorite segment of the night, the Garb Gab.
I have finally reclaimed the Gab from Devin after he's hoarded it the last couple of weeks, stolen it back from me when he left it on my porch. I just took too long. He just sat around and kept it.
Sounds like a fucking Uber Eats driver.
I'm just stealing my food.
He's like, I dropped it off, but he didn't come to get it. And I was hungry. So this is mine now.
Yeah, I guess so. Anyway, so here's the Gab. It's ready for you to stick your little hands in, if you would please.
Boy. I don't know why I made that sound effect, because that was not what was in the bag, or excuse me, the Gab. I don't know why I made a shing sound.
I mean, it's just kind of fun, right? To just sound effect your own life.
It is. By the way, what am I touching in here? It's all kind of amorphous.
Amorphous.
Or rather, like, I can't, like, you know when you touch something and you can kind of, like, figure it out by sensory. I can't do that. This is unknown touch.
So like the challenges where you would have to stick your hand in a box and like squeeze something, try and tell me what it is. You just would be unable to do that.
Yeah,
like at all. You wouldn't be good at
I
that.
Got nothing,
like,
bro.
Wouldn't even be entertaining. No entertainment value. All right. Well,
I'm just saying. I'm trying, and I got nothing so far. So I need some help.
All right. Well, just cross that one off the list. And it's a real bummer.
I have touch blindness.
For
you
that,
know
that bit. Touch blindness. Okay. Well, that's something. Yeah, I mean, you should be feeling something kind of sharp, so the shing wasn't too far off.
Like prickly or like slicey dicey. I'm starting to think maybe I just had some nerve damage after all.
You know what? They were sharpened Rubik's cubes there. All right. You know what? I took a Rubik's cubes. I broke one Rubik's cube. I broke it up into its segments and I sharpened them all. And I just kind of hope you'd go in there with reckless abandon and like cut your hands. I don't know. I was feeling kind of malicious tonight, and you just ruined all of it now. So just
I haven't taken my hand out of the bag. So like all those things could have happened. I just can't feel it for some reason. So I should definitely get that checked out. But you know, without further ado, I take out this Rubik's cube. I'm definitely bleeding. Kind of bothers me that I can't feel it. It's really jarring. Like I'm having an out of body experience. But anyway, wait. Do I have to solve this fucking Rubik's cube?
No, I just told you. I took one Rubik's cube, broke it apart into the individual cubes, and then sharpened them.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess not. Let me flip it around. Ow. Okay. Oh, I felt that. Nice. That's kind of good news. Anyway, the garb gab this week is haiku.
You wanna give the people your haiku?
Yeah, I actually wrote two. I went on hard mode this week for some fucking reason. Yeah, definitely overachieving. Not only did I write two, but I wrote them in Spanish.
All right. I mean, if you were ever going to do it, then this is probably one of the most pertinent times to do it. Yeah.
I will translate them into English for all the non-knowers out there. I will say for, I think the second one, I had to be creative about where the sentence break was or like the line break was. But anyway.
Another one?
Yeah. It's a little creative. It's not, you know. A little something. It's how you get the syllables to work, especially in a different language. But without further ado, my first one here is No Rocinante, conocí el corazón, hermano mayor, which translates to Not Rocinante, I knew him as Corazon, big brother. That's how I kind of see his relationship toward Law, just being a big brother, because he doesn't come off as fatherly in my mind. I think Law's dad did a really good job of being a proper father, and so Law doesn't feel a need or any kind of pull or tether to like replace that figure in his life. Anyway, the second one I wrote here is A mi corazón, al hombre que llegue a amar, gracias, which translates to my heart, to the man I grew to love, thank you.
Very nice.
I like the second.
There's something pretty cool. Nice, different. It's a nice shakeup to use different language.
Shout out to all my Spanish knowers out there. And so also to Google Translate. And in case Google Translate did a really bad job and I don't know it, fuck Google Translate.
All right.
All right, what do you got?
I have this here haiku. Cora the Silent, the heart and warmth Law needed. Time for cruel revenge.
That's good. Good haiku.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. But I think that's everything.
And with that, we have done it once again. I'll do the thing. How about that?
All right.
Cool. I'll nominate myself for the thing. Follow us on Instagram and X/Twitter. That's at Panda Sightings. You can send us an email like our resident taco and maybe try and one up his amazing question at our email, pandasightings@gmail.com. If you would like to financially support us, like Twiggle Taco and Rindu, among a lot of other patrons that we love so dearly, you can visit our Patreon. That's Panda Sightings as well. And if you would like to, or our Redbubble, previously mentioned in Taco's email, man, he did a really good job of just shilling all of the different subcultures that we have of our community now. You can buy actual products at the Redbubble store. If you would like to join and talk to a bunch of our other community members, including us, on a little bit more of a consistent basis than the email, you can join our Discord in the link tree or on our socials. There will be a link in the bios. And if you listen on YouTube, if you're a YouTube listener, we have YouTube. We're going to keep, you know, maybe doesn't need to be mentioned as much anymore, but we're on YouTube now. And I think that's it.
Elon Musk, don't sue us.
Elon Musk isn't going to listen to this.
I hope not. Or maybe I do. I don't know.
I mean, if you are listening, Elon, I love the Cybertruck. I think it's great. I am planning to buy one when I'm not a broke college kid.
And I have no comments on the Cybertruck.
And maybe when it's not $100,000.
Didn't the Cybertruck also has autopilot like their other regular car?
Oh, I'm sure it does. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe he's just trying to be ahead of the game. Where, you know, when you buy computers, you don't always fill up all of the RAM slots, for instance. You like leave room for growth there. So maybe he was just trying to leave room for you to be able to install your own batteries.
You know what? Just might.
Or like the Android phones of old, where the my favorite draw that they had over Apple products was that you could still insert a micro SD card to expand your storage. So even if you had, even if you had no money and you just bought a shitty like 128 or probably lower, like 64 or 32 gig storage device phone, you could buy a micro SD with like 500 gigs for like 30 bucks from Best Buy and just slot that bitch in there. We don't do that anymore, but those were, that was nice at the time. Maybe he's just trying to do that. You know, he's trying to throw it back to the days of old. You know, I'm on your side, Elon. Pay me, please. I'll shill whatever you want if you give us more money. Buy out our podcast network. Rooster Teeth got bought out by Mr. Beast. I'll buy our podcast. We have a network. It's only got two,
but we can grow
three if you count Jordy's solo podcast. So you know we're steadily building our own network. Justin's gonna make his own at some point soon.
Oh yeah, I definitely plan on going solo someday.
He gives movie reviews, but in reverse, he watches the movie backwards.
I mean, I could steal Jordy's idea. I was definitely thinking about just being an interviewer, just talking to people. I just like talking to people, you know. People got a unique story to tell. No, Elon Musk could be my first guest.
See, there you go. Exclusivity deal.
Yeah, man.
That's what I'm talking about. That's that entrepreneurship, Justin.
Hell yeah.
All right. Anyway, let's go work out the details of this.
Yeah. So we can thanks make for it listening to our tech talk this week, guys. We really appreciate that.
Yeah. Thanks. That'll be my podcast. I'll do tech reviews, but only tech that relates to how well I can watch videos in augmented reality.
Oh, that sounds cool.
So like one. I do one.
Well, you got to work ahead of the curve, you know. Certainly the technology scene is growing there.
Yeah. By the time I'm ready to and I've done all the research, there will surely be more technology out there. And definitely don't want it just to look at feed pics.
What an outro, by the way.
That's they do say that about us, that we really know how to close out a podcast episode every time. It's really one of our specialties.
And if Elon contacts us, we will show him that we know how to close out a deal too.
Oh my God, we're just too good. It's just too, we're too clean with it. I gotta walk away. We're just giving all these ideas for free. I gotta hit stop.